Welcome to The Apple Seed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and today's stories are about tiny acts of kindness. Not the big heroic moments that might hit the news, but those small everyday things we might do that lift the spirits of others around us. Chances are you've been on the giving end of some of those acts of kindness and the receiving end too, so you know how it feels. And you'll recognize it, I bet, in today's stories. When North Carolina storyteller Donald Davis was young, it was his Aunt Esther who taught him the power of kindness. He'll tell us all about it in this story. He calls it Aunt Esther Learns to Drive. Here's Donald.
Thank you. When I was a little boy, one of my favorite relatives was my Aunt Esther. She was one of my daddy's little sisters. She was born in 1908, so she was more like a grandmother to me. And many, many times, my mother would go leave me to spend the whole day at Aunt Esther's house. Now, Aunt Esther didn't drive, but Uncle Mark drove, and he would come home from work for lunch every day. And many, many days, when he would come home for lunch and he'd get ready to go back to work, Aunt Esther would say, "Mark, take me to town with Donald so we can go spend the afternoon in town." And I can remember the very, very first time we ever did that. I was 4 or maybe 5 years old. She turned to me and she said, Go get some money. They had a big jar that was on the kitchen cabinet where I think when they came home from anywhere, they just dropped their coins in there, and it was mostly full of coins. And I started to dig coins out of that jar, and she said, just get pennies. And I knew what that meant because I knew what you could get for a penny, candy. And I dug out all the pennies I could find. They bulged out in my pocket, and we got in the car, and my Uncle Mark took us to town to spend the whole afternoon. I thought we were going to go to the dime store because that's where you got the candy for a penny. But she says, no. There's another reason we brought the pennies. See, in those days, we had parking meters in town. You would park your car, and you could put in a penny and get 12 minutes on the parking meter, or you could put in a nickel and get a whole hour on the parking meter. And the reason we had brought the pennies was we went all the way up and down Main Street, and every time we came to a parking meter that had not quite run out yet, we put one penny in it and gave them 12 more minutes before they get a ticket. And every time we came to a parking meter that had run all the way out, we would put two pennies in it, giving them 24 minutes before they got the next tickets. And I really wanted the candy. But we were putting in the pennies and putting in the pennies, and all of a sudden we were right in front of the Lady Fair Beauty Parlor when a lady with curlers in her hair came running out the door saying, "Oh my goodness, I'm going to get a ticket. I was in there longer than I thought I was going to get in there." And just as she got out to her car, I was putting two pennies in her parking meter. And she says, "Oh, little boy, you have saved me $2. And she gave me the whole nickel she was going to put in to keep her from getting that ticket. And all of a sudden, I didn't want candy anymore. I just wanted to keep putting the pennies in the parking meters. And once in a while, sure enough, somebody would show up just as I'd put a penny in there, and I would always get a little reward from doing that. And it was the first time I ever learned how to give away some of the things that you really wanted to keep for yourself. Now, let me tell you a little event that happened that will help you understand more about the relationship between Aunt Esther and Uncle Mark. It was the fall of the year, and we were visiting at their house on a Sunday afternoon. And right there in the middle of the table in the living room, my Aunt Esther had a big glass bowl. It was huge, and it was all full of apples from the apple trees where she had picked apples there in the fall. different relatives were there visiting, and through the afternoon, gradually all the apples disappeared. And she said to Uncle Mark, "Mark, take my bow, got it, down in the basement and fill it up with apples and bring it back up here again." The basement was the place where they kept the potatoes from the garden, the onions from the garden, the apples from the apple trees, all the canned goods that had been put up, like the green beans and everything else from the garden. And every time Aunt Esther would bring up, a quart of green beans for supper, it was easy to go down and bring the beans up when the jar was full, but when the jar was empty, it was just too far to take it all the way back down there. And so she would put those jars on the top steps until the steps were so full you couldn't get up, and then she'd carry them all back at once. Uncle Mark didn't know that. And he had that bow right in front of him, blocking his vision completely. And we heard the door open to the basement, and the next thing we heard was glass breaking and jars falling everywhere, and he was tumbling down the stairs head over heel. It was a horrible noise. And then all of a sudden, everything stopped crashing, and all the sound came totally to a stop, and it was dead silent. And Aunt Esther said, "Mark, did you break my bowl?" And he said, "Not yet." But that helps you understand how the two of them got along with each other. Now, I already told you she didn't drive. But in spite of her not driving, they still had two cars. Uncle Mark had his work car. We called it his pumpkin car. It was almost an orange color, a 1948 Ford that was round like a pumpkin. He worked at the builder supply house, and his job was to go around to all the different work sites where the builder supply house was supplying the materials, find out what people needed, and then the truck would come along later in the day and make all the deliveries. And then they had their Sunday car. It was a blue Pontiac with a sun visor in the front and long chrome stripes that came down over the engine hood and a hood ornament that looked like Chief Pontiac, and it would light up at night when you turned the lights on. But Uncle Mark was the driver. The work car during the week, work, 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 and the Sunday car to church on Sunday. One Sunday, they came home from church in that Pontiac, and Uncle Mark didn't put it back in the garage. It was a beautiful day. Just left it in the driveway, and about the time they finished Sunday dinner, family members came by to visit, and they actually went to bed that night, and the weather was so pretty, he still didn't even put the car in the garage. The next day, he went off to work, and when he went out to one of the jobs, he was on the second floor of a house being built, and there were some boards that had not been nailed down. And he stepped on one of those boards, and it flipped up in the air, and he went from the second floor all the way down to the first floor and landed and broke his femur. The ambulance came and hauled him off to the hospital. He spent a whole night at the hospital. Finally, the next day, my daddy went to the hospital to take him home, and he had a full cast that went all the way down his left leg, and he was on crutches. And as soon as my daddy pulled in the driveway, Uncle Mark said, "Oh, no, I didn't put the car in the garage." And with his left leg in the cast, in that old Pontiac that he had to change the gears in, he couldn't mash the clutch in and let it out. And he was going to be in that cast for 6 or 8 weeks. And there, their Sunday car was going to have to sit out in the weather for 6 or 8 weeks. And he decided right then it was time for my Aunt Esther to learn to drive. He said, "Esther, come outside. It's time for you to learn to drive." She said, "I don't need to drive. You drive. I don't want to learn to drive." He said, "You're only going to learn to drive for just a minute. I'm going to teach you to drive just long enough to get the Pontiac up into the garage." She did not want to. She did not want to. But he wouldn't give up. And finally she said, okay, I'll give it a try. Well, he was out there with his crutches. And she came around and he opened the door of the Pontiac and she got in the driver's seat. And he leaned over and he wiggled the gear shift till it was in neutral. And then he told her how to turn on the switch. He had to pull out, in those days, the choke and the throttle. And then he got her to mash the button, and the car started. And he pushed the choke back in, but he left the throttle out just a little bit, so that way she wouldn't even have to worry about the gas pedal. That car would just go forward on its own. And then there on his crutches, he began to explain what to do. He said, now, Esther, you take your left foot and you push in the clutch. What's that? It's that pedal right there by your left foot. And she pushed in the clutch. And then he leaned across her in the window and he pulled the Pontiac back into low gear. And then he said, now, here's what you do, Esther. You won't have to mess with the gas. I already pulled the throttle out a little bit. Very slowly, let out the clutch, very slowly, and the car will start moving forward, and very slowly, it'll go right up in the garage, and when you get it in the garage, push in the clutch. Now, it hadn't occurred to him that she was not born knowing that you also put on the brake. And he stood there on his crutches saying, let out the clutch, let out the clutch, let out the clutch. And the Pontiac started moving forward. She let it on out. And here it went zooping up into the garage. Once in the garage, she pushed in the clutch. The Pontiac didn't even slow down. It went kabam into the other end of the garage, and here it came backwards, rolling down the driveway. He's jumping up and down. Let out the clutch, let out the clutch, let out the clutch. Here comes the clutch. It starts up in there again. She pushes in the clutch, bam, again. Here it comes back out of the garage, down through the driveway. Let out the clutch, let out the clutch, let out the clutch. Here it goes up the hill into the garage, and fortunately this time she killed the engine and it stopped. And she got out of the car, and she came walking out of the garage, just dusting her hands off like she had done a great job. And Uncle Mark said, why didn't you stop when you had it in the garage, Esther? She said, I put it in there three times. Why didn't you shut the doors? Well, after that day, she decided she really wanted to learn to drive. And so gradually he gave her lessons and gave her lessons. And she did pretty well, except as she went down the road, she just kind of, you know, went like this. And the car went like this. And he said, Esther, you don't need to do that. Go straight, go straight. And she kept saying, I can't feel it, I can't feel it, I can't feel it. Well, he tied a string to the top of the steering wheel, let it hang down, and said, just keep that string in the middle right there. You don't need to go like this. And sure enough, she got her eyes on the string, and she wasn't going back and forth anymore. She was just going right down the road, and everything worked just great till they came to a big curve. He hadn't thought about that. And she followed the string right off the side of the road into Homer West cornfield. And they had to borrow his tractor to pull her out again. So she decided then she did not need to learn to drive, that one driver in the family was just enough. We were traveling a year or so ago in Monterey, California. And I saw something there I just could not believe. They had parking meters, but the parking meters had little infrared sensors in them. So that if you parked in a parking place and you put in your quarters or 50-cent piece now, and you put 2 hours on the parking meter and you were only gone an hour and you came back, well, back when I was a little boy, the person who came next got all that time free. But those sensors, now when the car pulls out of that parking place, it cancels all that time, and whoever comes next has to start all over from zero. And I thought, that is just immoral. That's just stealing from people. I thought, what would my Aunt Esther do about that? And then I knew what she'd do about that. And the next time a car pulled out and there was some time left on the meter, I went over and stood right in front of the sensor so that it couldn't tell that car was gone, and stood there and waited till somebody else came along and parked in that same space. And then I stepped out of the way, and they got all the time that was left on the meter. And in that moment, I could hear my Aunt Esther say, "That's a good job, Donald. Put two pennies in the next one." Thank you. Thank you.
That was Donald Davis with "Aunt Esther Learns to Drive," recorded here in the Appleseed Studio. And hearing that story may have brought up for you the memory of a special car or a special driver from somewhere in your life. Today, I'm filled with a driving memory. In this memory, I was still a pretty new driver and still not accustomed to a stick shift, and I had just gotten a summer job working for a local landscaper, the dad of a friend of mine. It was my very first job, and when I got my very first paycheck, I wanted to take my dad out to lunch. I was so proud. And I wanted to pay, and I wanted to drive. And boy, getting out of the neighborhood was a circus of grinding gears and stalls and starts, about 10 miles of it, the whole distance between our house and our favorite diner. And at any point, my dad could have said something funny like, "Got a new job, now all you need to do is learn to drive." He could have said that. He could have said, "Looks like you need a little practice before you get behind the wheel, son. Pull on over. Maybe I should drive this time." I mean, he could have said something like that, too. There were a thousand things he could have said to gently poke fun at me for the genuinely comic performance I was putting in as a new driver that day. You want to know how many of those things he did say? None. Not one. And I don't know if it's because his son was taking him to lunch for the first time and he was proud of me, or if he just thought I needed to be proud of myself in that moment, needed to feel some kind of dignity. Might have been that. Well, we got to the diner, and we had a couple of great hamburgers on my dime. And then we went home, and we made it. We all survived, even the car. And I got better. Honest, I did. But I'll always remember how my dad treated me with even more dignity than maybe I deserved on that long ago day, and how much that meant to me. And that's where Donald's story took me. Where did the story take you, and who will you take along?
Hi, Sam here, and I want to take just a moment to let you know about a new podcast from BYU Radio. It's called Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. And it's a podcast in which you hear stories from people who experienced something, either tough advice from a close friend or engagement with somebody on the other end of the political spectrum, conversations that made them really uncomfortable. But instead of backing away or getting angry or defensive, they kind of leaned in. They sort of stuck with the discomfort and heard out the person that was communicating with them. And they're glad they did. Not because it changed their position, because it clarified their own beliefs. And Uncomfy, the podcast, features stories of folks who engaged in that way. It's really helping me engage with a world in which division really seems to be the norm. Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us is the name of the podcast. And, you know, if you listen to the Appleseed, then you've heard us say stories bring us together. It's kind of how I feel about the conversations that happen on Uncomfy. You can find it wherever you might be listening. You can watch it on the BYU Radio app. It's a video and audio podcast. There are lots of great ways to engage with these conversations. Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. Check it out.
It's great to have you with us on today's episode of The Appleseed, and our next story comes from Chicago storyteller Jasmine Cardenas with a folk tale that shows us that no act of kindness is ever too small to have an important impact. The story is called Jade Hummingbird, and it was recorded live in our Appleseed studio.
The hummingbird is the most delightful little animal, and it can be found in all of North America and Central America and down south in South America. Its feathers are a beautiful hues of green and turquoise and blue and iridescent purple in there. And the hummingbird is the only animal that can fly quickly, quickly, quickly and stop in midair, fly backwards and stay flying in one spot without falling. How can it do that? Well, its wings are flapping at 90 flaps per second, and its heartbeat is racing at 1,200 beats per minute. You can see that this impressive animal came from a very special place. The people of the Maya, the Mayan people, in Guatemala, in Central America, they speak of a time when the gods created everything, all things, and they took corn and made people. They took mud and built animals and gave everyone a job. Every human and life form had a purpose. And when all was created, they realized, oh, we forgot one thing. We forgot a messenger. Who will be the messenger for the gods to the people and the people to the gods? And so there was no more mud and there was no more corn. And they looked around and they found a precious green stone, jade, jade. And so they chiseled it into a little arrow and the gods blew life into this jade. And out flew el colibrí. Colibrí is Nahua for hummingbird. The Mayan call it tsunum. The tsunum would bring messages from the gods to the people and the people to the gods. And it was so beautiful and wondrous the way it flew backwards that the people wanted to trap it and cage it. This angered the gods. No one should trap the hummingbird. El tsunum must fly freely. It has a very important job. If you trap it in a cage, how will it get our messages to the people? And so if you ever travel to Guatemala or Central America, you'll never see a hummingbird in a cage because the people respected the message and the messenger. El tsunum, el colibrí, like I said, does not stay just in that Central American part. No, she travels all over. And down in Brazil, what you and I call present-day Brazil, the people, the Guarani people that lived, they were known as the forest people. They lived and still live among the trees. And they speak of el colibrí and el jaguar in a different story, the jaguar. I brought today my jaguar death whistle. And this is an Aztec instrument. It is not from the Guarani people, but it's been found in multiple burial sites across Mexico. And because its sound is so uniquely el jaguar, the jaguar, I wanted to include it in our story. El jaguar is the biggest predator in this hemisphere. It is known by all the people of South America and Central America as the death animal because el jaguar is fast, so fast that in the time of a great, great fire in the Amazon rainforest, the jaguar was moving out, away from the fire, rushing as fast as it could, leading the way for all the animals to find their way out. When, oh, he saw the most peculiar thing. El colibrí was flying back in, flying in towards the fire. He called out, "Stop, amigo, stop! You're going to get burned in the flames!" But that colibri was so fast and seemed to be with purpose. He flew straight past him and into the fire. The jaguar said, "It's okay, my friend will feel the flames and the heat, and he'll make his way out to safety." And as he raced out with all the animals, he saw El Colibri, that hummingbird, was flying out of the fire zone. And he felt happy that he would be saved as well, those beautiful iridescent wings flying away to safety. But then it came back. Quick as could be, the jaguar called out. This caught the colibri's attention, and he said, "Stop, amigo. You're going to burn and perish in the flames. You're disoriented. Turn, go back, out, out." And the colibri said, "No, I must do my part. I need to bring water from the river and douse my home, my tree. I must protect my home. I can do my part. We all must do our part." And the jaguar listened to this small little friend and he... "Don't be silly. You're going to burn. You must get out. You're too small. What can you do?" And then and there, the colibri said, "I must do my part," and flew into the fire to his home and spit out the water in his beak. And the gods took note. And seeing the courage of such a small creation, they sent down a great big storm of rain. And the rain fell and fell and fell so strongly that the fire was out. The colibri knew that he had to do his part, and we all have to do our part. For our Earth, our Mother Earth, is there's only one like her, with enough oxygen and enough drinking water for all of us to survive. I know that we can all do our part to protect the most beautiful Mother Earth, the only one of its kind. Thank you.
Jasmine Cardenas with Jade Hummingbird. Was there a special person in your life that modeled kindness for you? Can you remember one of the first times you went out of your way to do something kind for someone else? Any good driving memories? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. Email or message us with what stories came to mind for you as you listen to today's episode. Our email address is theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed@byu.edu. It's not the only way to get a hold of us, but it's a good one. Now, listener Moni Jackson recently wrote to us and said, "I'm brand new to the Appleseed podcast, and I must say I'm hooked. I love it. I've always been crazy about a good narrator, and the way these storytellers animate their voices sends me back to a happy childhood. Bravo, Appleseed." Listen, Moni, we're so glad you found us, and so glad that the stories that we're sharing with you bring back memories of your happy childhood. That's what they're for. Thanks for listening. We also want to thank Donald Davis and Jasmine Cardenas for their tales today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, Brian Tanner, and Kira Van Dam. The rest of the Appleseed team is Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom, where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. That's how the shows grow. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.